Blog Talk Radio.
Morning, Internet world. Welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and I want to thank you once again for taking time out of your busy schedule to join me on the Monday morning edition of The Cross in the Desert. This morning, I'm continuing and actually finishing up section two of my book, Broken Yet Beautiful. That section is entitled, In the Name of Religion. Last week, I began that section of my book speaking about the oppression of women in Islam. And this week, I'm going to take us into Saudi Arabia and finish up this section with a teaching about the oppression of women in Saudi Arabia. I hope that this series has been beneficial to you. This is a clarion call, a voice for women, those that are gifted and given abilities by God, that they should be able to teach, pastor, and lead in God's church. There should be no discrimination, no male hierarchy, no oppression of women. And this section of the book I'm teaching from is showing how in Islam women are oppressed on a daily basis. And that should never be the case in God's church, in his kingdom. I'm finishing up this section this week, and I'm taking us to Saudi Arabia, the birthplace of Islam. But before I get into that section, I want to talk to you about something that happens uniquely in Saudi Arabia. Did you know that there is an app available in the Play Store of many phones, including Apple and up on Google, and that men in Saudi Arabia use this app to track women, to keep track of them? The name of the app is called Absher, and Google has remained silent over reports. It told a U.S. congresswoman that a controversial app, Absher, was not in breach of its terms and conditions. Saudi app Absher can be used by men to track women and prevent them from traveling. The office of Jackie Spire confirmed to the BBC that a verbal conversation took place with Google after she co-wrote a letter of complaint about this app. Google declined to comment. Absher is currently available, as I said, on both Apple and Google's app stores. Now, the app, which also offers access to government services, has been criticized by human rights groups. In addition to enabling users to carry out tasks, for instance, like renewing their driver's license, it also asks men to list dependent women. It can then be used to either deny or allow individual travel of these women. Women in Saudi Arabia need the permission of a male guardian, usually their husband or father, to leave the country. And this particular app has been downloaded more than a million times. It's been around for several years. In February, Apple CEO Tim Cook told the NPR, National Public Radio, the firm, well, they would investigate. Ms. Spires said she found the responses of both Apple and Google, quote, unsatisfactory. She says, to say I'm disappointed in their failure to show a sustained commitment to human rights is an understatement. In Saudi Arabia, well, the opinion about Absher is divided. Men control how women travel in Saudi Arabia. That's mandated by the law. So we're looking at this controversial app. You can go up to the Play Store just like I did and look at it. That is the basis for the program today, that we have technology now to oppress women, especially in Saudi Arabia. Wow. I'm finishing up this section, and we're going to go into Saudi Arabia this morning and talk about the male guardianship law. I'm reading from my book, Broken Yet Beautiful, Rising Up from Their Ashes. This book you can purchase up on Amazon in both Kindle and paperback. It is a book that will help you as a woman to understand God's calling for your life, that he has equipped you to teach and preach in his church, in his kingdom. There should be no male hierarchy. There should be no discrimination. This is a battle that is constantly being waged every day, and I'm hopeful and prayerful that this book will bring healing to your scars and will encourage you. Chapter 2, Section 2, In the Name of Religion. On Sunday, June 24th, 2018, the world witnessed an historic milestone take place in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. After decades of protests, the driving ban against women was finally lifted, and for the first time now, women can legally be issued driver's license and sit proudly behind the wheel of a car without going to jail again. While this is a major historic accomplishment in a nation hostile to the rights of women, still, it is a very long road ahead for women to finally experience true freedom. Most every Saudi woman will tell you, and they've told this to me in chat many times, through emails, through video chats, that until the male guardianship law is finally repealed, they will still be under the domination of a man. Now, before I go into the restrictions on women because of the male guardianship law, I want us to understand the context of what's going on in Saudi Arabia. They practice a form of Islam known as Wahhabism. Wahhabism was born through a radical 18th century Muslim reform movement. The purification of Islam took place through the efforts of Muhammad ibn al-Wahhab and was formally adopted by the Saudi family way back in 1744. Members of Wahhabism call themselves Unitarians, with a strong emphasis on the absolute oneness of God, Tawhid. They reject the practice of visiting tombs, venerating saints, advocating a return to the original teachings of Islam incorporated in both the Quran and the Hadith. They also stress a literal belief in the Quran and the establishment of a Muslim state based solely on Sharia law. The Wahhabis occupied Mecca and Medina at the end of the 18th century, bringing everything under their control. The Kingdom of Saudi Arabia was created actually back in 1932, assuring the religious and political dominance of Wahhabism. Many of the sites associated with the early of history of Islam, homes, graves, or companions of Muhammad, were demolished in order to purify the holy religion. Now, we want to understand the history here. Both Britain and the United States subsidized Saudi Arabia in 1945, that was right after World War II, and enabled them to join the United Nations. While the driving ban has been lifted, more than likely for economic reason rather than for women's rights, there is still a great chasm for females to cross until they have obtained equal rights. The rules for the male guardianship law prohibit so much of women's freedoms despite a few glimpses of hope on the horizon, like with the lifting of the driving ban. Now, back in 2015, women were able to cast ballots for the first time during municipal elections, but couldn't speak to male voters or couldn't have men and women mixing in their campaign offices. The late King Abdullah issued a decree in 2011 that gave women the vote, and two years later, ordered 20% of seats in Conservative Council to be set aside for women. In 2015, there were more Saudi women studying in universities than men. And a few years earlier, back in 2012, Saudi Arabia sent two women to the Olympics. So you see these glimmers of hope on the horizon. But now what I want to do is specifically explain to you what Saudi women cannot do yet in Saudi Arabia. Number one, Saudi women cannot divorce, travel, get a job, or have surgery first without permission from their male guardians. So again, you see the heart of this law is very restrictive. Number two, Saudi women cannot freely mix with members of the opposite sex. In 2013, authorities ordered shops that employ both men and women to build separation walls to prevent sexes from commingling. So again, we see this in the everyday busy life of a Saudi woman and in their workplace. What happens? No mixing of the sexes. Number three, Saudi women cannot appear in public without wearing a full-length black abaya, which is supposed to protect a woman's modesty in public. And you see the pictures on my page. It's like a tent. Can you imagine having to wear that in the oppressive heat in Saudi Arabia? Number four, Saudi women cannot conduct certain businesses without a male sponsor. If a woman wants to own her own business, she has to call at least two men who can testify of her character in order to have a loan approval or a license. So in the courts, the testimony of a woman is worth only half that of a man's. Number five, Saudi women cannot apply for a national identification card or passport. Number six, Saudi women cannot eat at restaurants that don't have a segregated, separated family section. Women are also required to use a separate entrance from men. Number seven, Saudi women cannot retain custody of their children in a divorce. It all goes to the male. Number eight, Saudi women cannot get a fair hearing in court. The Quran teaches in Surah chapter 2, verse 282, that their testimony is only worth half that of a man's. And finally, Saudi women cannot receive an equal inheritance. So you see what the male guardianship law does to women. And my good friend Amna, which I dedicated this book to, spent so much time away from home. She escaped from home to escape the terrors of being a woman. And while she was put away in a detention center, she was released about a year and a half ago. And I hope and pray that she has found her way out of Saudi Arabia like other women have done recently. Well, back in April of 2017, the United Nations elected officials from Saudi Arabia to sit on a commission for women's rights. Imagine that. This is insulting to the women of Saudi Arabia who are constantly living under the oppressive dictatorship of men. It is absurd that a group of women sit on a panel, a group of men sit on a panel that supposedly promotes women's rights, shaping global standards are gender equality and empowerment of women. UN Watch director Hillel Neuer rightly points out, quote, every Saudi woman must have a male guardian who makes all critical decisions on her behalf, controlling a woman's life from birth to death. Electing Saudi Arabia to protect women's rights in the UN is like electing an arsonist to become the town fire chief, close quote. This panel in the United Nations has a four-year term that started April 24th, 2017, and will finally expire April 2021. I want to be able to sum up in this section the horror the mistreatment of women in a way, making a point that you will understand, that you'll comprehend as you listen to this podcast today. We've taken an in-depth look at the oppressive treatment of women under Sharia law. And through this little brief survey, we've discovered that these women aren't treated as human beings, but rather as prisoners of sexual gratification and possessions of men. This was probably the most stressful section of the book that I had to write. And in this section of the book, I concluded with an illustration from a blog I wrote several years ago that sums up the oppression of women under Sharia law. I have a dear Iranian friend named Atafi. She lives in Tehran, and she has shared many powerful stories of what life is like there for Iranian women. Her stories are featured in my book, The Cross in the Desert, and you can see them on my blog site. As I conclude this painful section, I want to share with you Atafi's story, and I think this puts into perspective exactly what women are treated like under false religion. One of the traditions of my Iranian friends as they prepare for the celebration of Nowruz, the Persian New Year, is shopping for new clothes. Spring is just around the corner, and it's time for new beginnings. And one of those new beginnings is expanding one's wardrobe. Now, here's the story. My dear friend Atafi, who lives in Tehran, excitedly left home one day to go shopping at a local clothing store. And she's browsing in this clothing store, and she notices Iranian security officers confronting the store owner. And she's wondering, what are they doing here? What's going on? Later on, she discovered that the security officers had found the store owner was in violation of the Islamic dress code. Why? The owner of the store, the clothing store in Tehran, had failed to put hijabs on all of the mannequins and had to do so immediately or be arrested. It is Islamic law for all women to wear a veil when they go out publicly. If they fail to comply, they can be fined, they can be arrested, and even lashed. Wait a minute. Hold on. Help me out here. Is there not a distinction between human beings and mannequins in a store window? Well, what is a mannequin? A mannequin is a lifeless form of plastic representing a human being that is used to display the latest fashion in store windows. Oh, okay. I get it now. The Islamic regime would prefer that all Iranian women behave just like mannequins. Mannequins don't speak. They don't talk back. They don't protest. They don't whine. They don't complain. These lifeless plastic forms wear whatever you put on them without complaint and stand in the window all day. It seems that image is everything, according to Iranian law. Iranians, specifically women, are supposed to obey without complaint and wear whatever they are told, just like mannequins in the store window. Wow, the sad reality to this image is everything scenario is that it reduces human beings, real human beings, to lifeless forms without hearts and souls. They quickly lose all self-worth and self-esteem, and that's exactly what false religion does. It robs people of all meaning and purpose in life and reduces them to little more than puppets on a string. Well, here's some insight to that scenario. God didn't create us as lifeless forms, as mannequins, or puppets on a string. Instead, He created us with great value and gave us a heart to discover the beauty of life that surrounds us. He breathed into our souls love, purpose, and creativity to shine like the brilliant colors of the rainbow and to make a difference in a world of suffering and pain. Our lives won't shine very brightly if we are reduced to the morbid and depressing existence of mannequins in a store window. Image is everything, right? That story, since the day that Atefi shared that with me, I have shared this so many times in videos, in interviews, and those that listen to this story almost weep because it makes the point. This is what false religion reduces women to. You know, a mannequin can't complain. It doesn't say a word. It stands there in the window. It wears whatever you put on them. And this is what the Iranian regime, the Islamic Republic of Iran, wants women to behave like: lifeless plastic mannequins. I want to answer the heart cries of women this morning. I want to reach out to them with hope. And the God of the Bible offers true hope and healing for both Iranian and Saudi women. The Bible teaches that he hears the cry of the oppressed and he rescues them. The last 8 years of my life I have spent writing the stories of my dear Iranian friends and being their voice. And I believe one day soon they will be able to walk down the streets of Tehran without fear of being arrested. I believe that day is coming. I also believe that God is going to bring justice and freedom to the very women of Saudi Arabia. I can say that with confidence because the Bible teaches that God is a God of justice. I want to take you to one of my most favorite psalms I talk about so often. It's an encouragement that God will keep his promise and free the women of the Middle East and restore their dignity to them. And if you followed me at all in my podcast, you know how Jesus treated women during his ministry here. And so you can have hope that when the Bible teaches he will free the oppressed, that he means what he says. This particular psalm I'm going to quote to you is a psalm I pray almost every day for my Iranian friends. Psalm chapter 72, verses 12 through 14. It reads, "He will rescue the poor when they cry to him. He will help the oppressed who have no one to defend them. He feels pity for the weak and the needy, and he will rescue them. He will redeem them from oppression and violence because their lives are precious to him." God rescues, defends, and delivers the oppressed when they cry out to him. And that's a powerful promise from God's word. God understands the pain because he became a human being in Jesus. And he suffered excruciating pain in order to save us from our sins. Jesus was spit upon. He was mocked. He was insulted. He was betrayed. He understands evil and betrayal because he experienced every one of the things that Saudi men and women, that Iranian men and women suffer with every day. He understands your pain. The women of the Middle East, thankfully, are leaving Islam every day because they have found a God who understands their pain and suffering. Jesus is that God. He is not some distant deity far away, disconnected from our pain, but a God who is both our refuge and strength and our ever-present help in time of need. I want to end with a story that happened to me recently. I have a friend named Daniela. She contacted me through Facebook and told me a story. She says, "I am looking for the truth. Can you help me?" And I began to get to know her, and she said to me, you know, I'm attracted to Christianity, but I'm kind of practicing Islam. And I saw a picture of my friend, and she was dressed in her Islamic clothes, her hijab, her burqa. And she says, but, you know, my husband is a practicing Muslim. I mean, he treats me well. He doesn't hurt me. But I don't agree with this, Randy. I'm searching for the truth. And I was just like, wow, I was shocked. I'll be glad to help you with that, Daniela. And so I sent her some blogs and some articles, some of the things I've read to you here, and shared with her the truth that's found in Jesus. And to make a long story short, she said, you know, I'm needing a Bible. And just a week ago, I sent her a Bible. And this is what I'm saying to you. God is bringing women out of Islam to himself. They are finding their hope and freedom in Jesus. And I was privileged to help my friend Daniela through a time of searching, a crisis point in her life. And that doesn't happen very often, that I get a message from someone like Daniela. But I was thrilled that God gave me the opportunity to reach out to her. And she's become a good friend. And I'm praying for her to find her hope and healing and freedom in Jesus. And please join me in praying for her, especially for her husband, who is a practicing Muslim. You know, Muslims are all over Facebook. And oftentimes, we become upset about the violence, and we should, and about the honor killings and the terrorist attacks. But there are average, everyday, peaceful Muslims like Daniela who are searching for the truth. And God has given me a unique opportunity to connect with these people. He can give you that same opportunity. And so what I'm saying to you is there is hope and healing for Muslim women just like Daniela, who is searching for the truth. She lives right here in the United States, but there are millions of others all over the internet, all over the world, looking for hope and healing. And the Bible says that Jesus is that hope and that healing. If this morning you are hurting, if you're like Daniela, that you are searching, that you're looking for truth, Jesus says to you, I am the way and the truth and the life. That he can give you hope and healing and a purpose that you've been looking for. I can testify how I see how God answers prayer and moves among Muslim women and moves among those that are searching, because he did it just recently with my friend Daniela. And Daniela is one woman among thousands that are looking for hope and truth. And Jesus is that hope, and Jesus is that truth. Now, this Thursday, we're going to begin a new section in my book, Broken Yet Beautiful. I'm going to be talking to you about the scriptures used against women to discourage them from pastoring and teaching. And it's going to be a very important, powerful section in my book. I want to say to you, God bless you and have a great week. I will see you again on Thursday on the Cross in the Desert.